Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a kind of warm for almost December, 56 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. So a week is supposed to be relatively warm, decreasing by the weekend. And I think they finally said more snow on Monday. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Avatars, Robots, AI Eyes, Face Profiling, and Mind Scanning. And yeah, we spent about a week again on some of the newest artificial intelligence tools that are coming out and some of the jobs that are being absorbed and done better than humans by AI. We finished the show yesterday, though, looking at a few innovations. There was something by GE. GE had announced that they had acquired two artificial intelligence companies to integrate into their internet of factories to be able to make things smart. And one of the technologies out of their six innovation priorities was called mind mapping. And when we started reading about mind mapping, we discovered that they were going to be using those fMRI machines to scan brains and figure out connections. And of course, we know that this whole Connectome project, as well as the Brain Initiative, are all going on, and it'll all be in the name of curing you. Of course, mental disease is now on a spectrum. It'll be ways to fix your PTSD. We found out that there are already technologies out there that can visualize your thoughts and read your dreams. Now, how horrifying is that? That eventually, at some point in the not too distant future, they'll be able to put you in some sort of medical device. And maybe they don't even have to put you into a medical device at some point in the future, because the stuff is getting more and more portable on a daily basis. But to be able to suck your memories out of your brains. Now, we know that Ray Kurzweil's dream is to upload us into the machine, and that's what we were talking about, avatars. We talked about that Baby X and the company that spun out of that project called Soul Machines. It's located in Auckland, New Zealand, at the university. There was a doctor working there who also worked on the movie Avatar, and he is really, really good at super detailed computer AI simulations of humans. He created this baby that could literally interact with people on the other side in the physical world utilizing cameras, i.e., AI vision, and microphones, i.e. AI ears, to be able to learn or get startled. They showed making a loud noise and the baby jumps, and literally be a model for us not only to interact with, but to be able to then explore how our interactions are modeled in the virtual human body that was created as part of this project. And we know enough about science and biology now to be able to create this. We've given artificial intelligences such as Watson and Google's AI DeepMind project, Microsoft, right? We talked about this, all the big boys are on board. This is where all the investment funding is going. One of a few disruptive technologies that are full frontal in our face and going to change the way everything in our reality is done. But they're taking these technologies and they are trying to recreate humans in a digital format and eventually bridge that gap to be able to merge the two. And I know we've talked about that many, many times. It always sounded like a crazy science fiction fantasy, but it honestly isn't anymore. So let's kick off where we kind of breezed through yesterday. So there's still a progression here. This is all from last week. It's all been lined up, waiting and ready for you. Scientists have invented a mind-reading machine that visualizes your thoughts. We can take someone's memory and pull it out from their brains. Like, I just get horrifying visions in front of my eyes when I read something like that. You think your mind is the only safe place left for all of your secrets? Then think again, puny human. Because scientists are making real steps toward reading your thoughts and putting them on a screen for everyone to see. A team from the University of Oregon has built a system that can read people's thoughts via brain scans and reconstruct the faces that they were visualizing in their heads. And soon, you will see the results were pretty damn creepy. We can take someone's memory, which is typically something internal and private, and we can pull it out from their brain, says one of the team neuroscientist Bryce Cool to Brian Resnick at Vox Magazine. And here's how it works. The researchers selected 23 volunteers and compiled a set of 1,000 color photos of random people's faces. And the volunteers were shown these pictures while hooked up to an fMRI machine, just like the one that GE was talking about in their mind mapping project we talked about yesterday. And while taking in a mathematical description of each face they were exposed to in real time, the researchers assigned 300 numbers to certain physical features on the faces to help the AI see them as code. Now, remember, too, we talked about that Faceception, that Israeli company that has been able to take statistical genetic anomalies in people's faces and equate them to crime, terror, and IQ databases, bingo players, poker players, and be able to determine with high accuracy what type of personality you have just based upon genetic traits that are prominent in your face once these cameras scan you and apply you against a database. Now let's add to this. Taking certain features on faces, assigned numbers, ran your brain through an fMRI. Basically, this first phase was a training session for the AI. And remember, they have turned AI loose on YouTube. And we talked yesterday, too, about thousands of hours of television for them to learn about the human race. Like I said yesterday, I find it highly embarrassing if we are using sitcoms to teach AI what it is like to be a good nuclear family. Maybe they played the Brady Bunch, I don't know. But it's really sad because the reality of the situation does not necessarily reflect the propaganda that's being pumped out of the boob tube that is impressing young human minds. This is an alter reality they are creating and telling us to pretend to actually exist while people and families are getting blown up and hungry and homeless. The environment is getting destroyed all over the planet right now. We are in the Great Sixth Extinction, as many scientists have said. And I would say it's not even going to be environmental. It's going to be technology that takes us out. It's mad science gone mad. It's very, very quietly creeping into the back doors, and we're not even noticing because we're addicted to the devices that feed us this technology, all because of that dopamine. We looked at that documentary that has been released by that Stanford doctor called Screenagers about the effects of devices and that dopamine button on our children, and it's exactly what I have been observing myself on a personal note and receiving feedback from close friends and family about their children as well. It's a very disturbing thing. And so we are being overtaken by this technology. They are using the name of science, the name of curing us. putting us into these machines and injecting us with these little nanobot things that'll target cancerous tumors, CRISPRing human DNA to genetically modify our immune systems to be able to combat known and unknown pathogens, creating genetically modified viruses and bacteria that then they can put into things such as our gut. It'll go in, detect anomalies, and create some sort of remedy or drug on the fly. Yeah, we're just stepping right up for that stuff, guys. No, that's not going to affect our future as a human race. Not at all. They've admitted, and that was sarcasm, ding, they've admitted many times in some of these scientific journals we've been reading that they really don't know what the long-term effects are going to be. And it's all in the name of getting yourself published. Getting yourself in the annals of human history, in the bowels of the publications that are feeding us half-truths half the time. It's a very disturbing place to be at this point in history. Some place that, at least in recorded history, I don't think we've ever been before, but that's up for debate as to whether or not we've gotten to this point ever and completely wiped ourselves out. You know, one interesting side note is more and more of human history becomes digital. We're getting rid of paper, getting rid of books. Eventually we'll get rid of libraries because everything will be digitized and in the cloud in the 21st century Library of Alexandria. But what happens the day the digital Alexandria gets burned? What happens when a mega AI virus out of China or out of some dark cubicle in a basement in some former Soviet country gets let loose and does a mass delete because it infected everything? Time bombs. You know, one of those little zombie viruses. And everything just gets deleted all at once. What happens when there's a big EMP? And nothing has proper Faraday cages surrounding it. And it roaches half the internet backbone. All that knowledge that we've come to depend upon. Remember, we read about a study one time before where it showed that people, and this is the pre and the post-internet age, people in the pre-internet age, us, those of us who came before, who saw the world before technology took it over, have a tendency to try to think of the answer in our heads before we go look it up. It helps us remember things. I also saw something recently that showed, and I've said this for many, many, many years, I used to be able to imprint information when I was growing up, when I was studying for exams. All I had to do was write that information down. And then during the exam, guess what I could do? I could see the piece of paper that I wrote all that stuff on in my head, and I could literally read the sentence that they were asking me about in the test question, and I could write the answer down from this picture in my head that I could see. Well, study just came out not too long ago. I posted on my personal Facebook page. I think it fed out to the UCY feed on Twitter that they found that, yes, memory is increased when you write things down versus type them on a keyboard. So those are things that pre-internet people would do. But now, in this post-internet age, they've found in studies that when kids don't know an answer, the first thing they do is reach for the computer. And I mean, it was like seconds. They didn't even try to think of an answer. They just went to the machine to get the oracle to feed them the information. Now, guys, look how dangerous this is going to be for our evolution as a species, like I said yesterday, just like your pinky toe or your pinky finger, things that we don't use as much aren't that important to our survival, like that pinky toe. Eventually, a couple hundred, maybe thousand years from now, after reproducing many, many times, we are going to see evolution in motion, and those body parts might get smaller and might eventually disappear. Well, we've seen that in robots as well. We've seen robots, mother robots, technology, creating technology, exponential increases in intelligence. These mother robots, they instructed to build baby robots, and what did they do? Well, they were able to take their best features and build them into the baby, eliminating the things that maybe weren't so preferential to their future survival. Anyway, back to this brain thought-sucking fMRI experiment that they did. The machine managed to reconstruct each face based on activity from two separate regions in the brain, the angular gyrus, which is involved in a number of processes related to language, number processing, spatial awareness, and the formation of vivid memories, and the occipitotemporal cortex, which processes visual clues. Now, guys, actually, the sentence we just read was very interesting. This angular gyrus part of the brain is involved in processes related to language, number processing, and spatial awareness, as well as the formation of vivid memories. You know, I've always wondered about when I was a kid and I was able to write things down and then see like that actual piece of paper and read what it said like it was a photograph. But I was always, the other thing I was really good at was languages. I took three languages. I got my degree in English, and I went up to intermediate to advanced French in college. I took 8 years of that. Then I took Polish for a couple years, which I got to tell you, Polish was probably the hardest language ever. And that was something that was in my family. I'd heard a lot of Polish when I was growing up from my great-grandmother. My grandmother spoke kind of pig Polish, pig Latinish Polish. She knew all the swear words, but I picked up on that stuff really fast. I've been able to pick up on code and syntax for writing code, logic and linguistics, and just it's all a part of the same thing, and they all are the same. Math as a language as well. I was always really, really good at math, and I really think that that's just that part of the brain. Facial images. I took one of those crazy tests, and I was a little scared to do it because it was out of MIT, and it was all about this teaching AI. They said one of the things AI has problems with is recognizing faces, but there are people, and it's 1% of the population, very small number, that they call super recognizers. And super recognizers have this really uncanny ability to recognize faces. And they wanted to try to understand what it was about human minds, why some people have this super recognizer capability and some don't, for this facial recognition. And so I took this test. And it went on and on and on and on. And of course, I stayed anonymous, but then I was thinking at the end, I'm like, oh shit, they got my IP. This test went on and on and on and on and on. And as the test went on, they showed you, I don't know, there were probably 15 faces in a lineup. And then as it went on, they would fuzz the faces or crinkle the faces or bend the faces. And they did from all these different angles. You had to try to recognize what face it was after all these tries. And you're not even going to believe this, but I got a perfect score. And I swear to God, I was like, oh, shit. They're going to black bag me. I'm going to end up in some facility in a dark hallway up in Maryland at the Brain Research Center at John Hopkins University. It was just very scary. So anyway, that was just a side note, but I really do think that there is something to like that one section of the brain, because there are all those things that I, those are like some of my little superpowers that I don't mention. But it's interesting. It takes place in the angular gyrus. So they are now teaching AI to be able to do this stuff, and that is the super recognizer capability. I could guarantee you that they are trying to teach them. Like I said, they had said in the past that that was probably one of the big things that computers still had trouble with. Well, yep, yep, yep. So we have these 23 people, and they have all these facial images now of what they've scanned and what they were able to reconstruct out of people's heads. And so this is the story. It says, so yep, we are not we are not yet, I'm gonna add, going to be strapping down criminals and drawing perfect reconstructions of crime scenes based on their memories, or using the memories of victims to construct mugshots of criminals anytime soon. Ding. I don't know. I'd say in the not too distant future, there might be something. I mean, we might even not know that they are doing it to us. You walk through something like a scanner at an airport, and they're doing a quick draw fMRI on your brain, sucking your thoughts down, just like they could do to your cell phones with those unmarked private planes that the Homeland Security, I think it was one of the DHS or FBI, it might have been the FBI. They had all these unmarked planes, private little planes, not jets, little prop engines that were flying over areas. They were able to suck all your data from your cell phone, all your contacts, all your text messages, your photographs, and suck them up into the plane as they flew over you without you even knowing. But anyway, the researchers proved something very, very important. As Resnick points out for Fox Magazine, when they showed the strange reconstructions to another set of participants, they could correctly answer questions that described the original faces seen by the group hooked up to the fMRI machine. So one set of the people could read the thoughts of another set of people to a point via a machine, and now the team is working on even a tougher task, and that is getting their participants to see a face, hold it in their memory, and then get the AI to reconstruct it based upon the person's memory of what the face looked like. And as you could imagine, this is super hard to do, and the results make that pretty obvious. And I gotta say that, I don't know, the comparison of what they reconstructed looks a little bit different. But guys, with the way this technology is advancing, I don't think it's going to be very long before they can autocorrect this and they'll start comparing the faces scanned to the FBI, DHS, soon to be cloud everything database of facial scans as you start giving up your DNA. We saw a story a long time ago about a woman, I think she was in New York City, who's collecting chewing gum and cigarette butts from around the city. And she had a DIY DNA kit. She was able to take DNA off those objects. I don't know if she ran it through a sequencer that she had at home or took it to a lab. I think they said she took it to a lab. And they were able to recreate from the genetic features that they found in the DNA and the cigarette butts and the chewing gum pretty close reconstructions. She would make masks out of them and hang them on walls as part of this art exhibit of the faces that apparently spit out that gum or smoked that cigarette. Talk about creepier than shit, guys. I mean, this, I gotta tell you, this technology is gonna be the end of us all. This is the end of privacy. I know I kind of was making light of AI googly eyes yesterday, but I mean, we don't realize that just plugging a USB camera, and now they're integrated into all your new notebooks and your tablets and your cell phones. Just by putting a camera into a device, we literally have given another of the five senses to any artificial intelligence technology or application to come after. It's a frightening, frightening thought. Says it is janky as hell, but there is potential, and that is pretty freaking cool, and that's not my wording. Especially when we consider, and they say exactly what I did, just how fast this technology can advance given the right resources. And yes, that is bazillions in venture capital and all kinds of mad science scientists working 24/7 on cracking this nut. Maybe one day we will be able to cut out the middleman and send pictures, not just words, directly to each other, just using our thoughts. So I don't know, guys. Or have the government, I'll add that, sucking thoughts directly from our brains without our knowledge, so you can't even think bad things, Johnny. The second you think bad things, short circuit, we are going to release that little genetically modified living therapeutic bacteria in your gut to go release the drugs to make you forget again. And, you know, that's not too far out there. You know, what was the old mantra in the old days of Catholicism? Thought, word, and deed. You could sin in thought, word, and deed. Well, technology has become a religion. Oh, hell, Anthony talks about that a lot. These false prophets in science that say that they can cure anything. I mean, we've talked about that many times. This godlike cast that is coming out of the scientific community, they literally can create life synthetically. They are working on the synthetic human genome. They want to be able to push a button per the DARPA lady and create life on the fly, taking traits from life forms across the gamut that they have sequenced, making it into something that then can be useful. Of course, it's always about doing something useful, wink, for humanity. Or keeping us safe. War machine is what that says. And hey, don't worry about it, because even before these fMRIs, scientists were able to read dreams using brain scans. 2013. Scientists found a way to read dreams. Researchers in Japan also used an MRI scan to reveal the images that people were seeing as they entered into an early stage of sleep. Writing in the Journal of Science, they reported they could do this, and this was back then, with 60% accuracy. The team now wants to see if brain activity can be used to decipher other aspects of dreaming, such as emotions, and that's going to be important. Experience during sleep, because emotions are one thing that the machine up until this point does not have. We've found out in looking at a couple stories that machines are getting good at being able to judge faces, judge a book by its cover as well, and to judge micro expressions in humans. Those micro expressions can tell whether or not you're lying or whether or not you're hiding something. They also have facial recognition, facial emotional scanners, where they can determine whether or not you're road raging. We saw that in regards to the self-driving car. Okay, Johnny, you're having some bad thoughts there. Do not put the pedal to the metal. Warning. Warning, Johnny. Your blood pressure is increasing, and we see some road rage increasing. You have 30 seconds to get control of that, or we will be taking over the vehicle. 15 seconds, Johnny. Beep, 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 beep. Countdown to take over. I mean, honestly, our freedom to free thought and expression is going to be completely squashed. And I mean, road rage, of course, isn't a good thing, but on the other hand, road rage is an emotion. And once we no longer have control over our emotions, and those emotions are going to be squashed, And then the drugs will be released in our gut to bring us back within parameters, because your blood pressure being high affects all kinds of bodily systems. And you've done that one too many times, Johnny. We cannot have somebody who's going to tax the healthcare future of our children. We will be able to stop that and keep you safe by releasing the, I don't even know, some sort of relaxation chemical while the AI self-driving vehicle takes over and drives you to your destination. So where do we go from here? Because I've been kind of rehashing a few things. So we're going to get to where we totally ended the show yesterday. All these things are going on, and people aren't very happy. We found out in a few studies that there is now angst from humans toward AI. We are the resistant consumers. They aren't able to integrate things as quickly as they had hoped. They've now come up with a way to overcome fear in the brain. They are calling it reconditioning. No. If there was ever a thing that we've read up until this point that has frightened me, I would say brain reconditioning is probably one of them. Especially reading about GE's mind mapping initiative and all these things that they can already do, scanning brains, scanning faces, reading emotions. Researchers have discovered a way to remove specific fears from the brain out of Cambridge University in the UK. Researchers have discovered a way to remove specific fears from the brain using a combination of artificial intelligence and brain scanning technology. Their technique, published in the inaugural edition of Nature Human Behavior, could lead to a new way of treating patients with conditions such as, yes, of course, PTSD. The whole reason for DARPA's dabbling in the brain project, as well as phobias like arachnophobia or fear of AI. I wonder if they've given that an official name yet. Fear-related disorders affect around 1 in 14 people. So yes, this is a good investment of venture capital. That's what they're saying. And please consider a bull pressure on what? Oh, mental health services. Yes, it does, Johnny. That's why we're coming after you next. It's all in the name of keeping healthcare costs of the future down. Currently, a common approach is for patients to undergo some sort of aversion therapy, in which they confront their demons by being exposed to it in the hope that they will learn that the thing that they fear isn't harmful after all. However, this therapy is inherently unpleasant, and many choose not to pursue it. Actually, I did that when I was a kid to myself, being afraid of things in the dark. You know, I always was afraid there was something in my closet or something under the bed, you know, watching scary movies as a kid, that kind of happens. And one day I just decided I was going to turn around and face that fear, and I was going to walk into that dark toward that closet and toward that bed. And if something grabbed me, well, then I was right. And if something didn't grab me, well, then I was wrong. And you know what? That actually was pretty liberating to do that, because I overcame my own fear. And that was it. Took once or twice, and I never worried about it again. So I would say, even though it's unpleasant, embrace the fear. Embrace it, because it makes you stronger. Don't be a mamby-pamby and go crying in a corner in the face of something that's scary, because you will not make it in the future if shit falls apart. You're going to be one of those statistics that didn't quite make it to the next round. Anyway, now a team, or, you know, you'll be one of the ones standing in line to get your reconditioning therapy. Don't do it, Johnny. Don't do it. I'm telling you, it's all a trap. Now a team of neuroscientists from the University of Cambridge, as well as in Japan and in the USA. Guys, Japan is another one of those evil science labs. Has found a way of unconsciously removing a fear memory from the brain. Now, we remembered a story back from DARPA days where they were using flashes of light to get rid of PTSD, and they were able not only to remove traumatic memories, but also insert new memories. They were using also in another experiment some zippity-zapping to be able to remove memories as well. I don't know, maybe relieve the fear factor. I don't quite remember exactly what the zippity-zappy was doing, but they were playing with that vagus nerve. And that's part of that ElectRx program. As they've been playing with this stuff for a long time, the brain, being able to crack all the mysteries, is going to give them the next leg in the battle to taking us over as a species. We will have no defense once they have been able to not only read but manipulate different functions that we experience as biological entities. I mean, think about that for a moment. They will be able to manipulate biological processes on the fly. You can just go in for your reconditioning therapy. I was joking yesterday about bzz, 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 doing a mind wipe because Johnny was having bad thoughts, but that's exactly what this is talking about. The team developed a method to read and identify a fear memory using a new technique called decoded neurofeedback. The technique used brain scanning to monitor activity in the brain and identify complex patterns of activity that resembled a specific fear memory. And in the experiment, a fear memory was created in 17 healthy volunteers by administering a brief, oh no, here we go, by administering a brief electric shock when they saw a certain computer image. And when the pattern was detected, the researchers then overwrote the fear memory by giving their experimental subject a reward. So, you know, that is something that's been known for a long time. If you keep doing positive reinforcement, especially like with an animal, you brought home an animal that had been a shelter animal or had been a stray, you know that you have to work on that positive reinforcement to get that animal over their traumatic experiences. And a lot of times that animal will come out just fine. That's exactly what they are doing to humans. They are able to detect when they have that fear and then give them a reward. Now, I'm not sure what that reward is, but I could guarantee you it has something to do with dopamine. That seems to be their favorite push button. Dr. Ben Seymour of the University of Cambridge's engineering department was one of the authors of the study. And notice how we have this crossing of science and technology into different medical fields now. That is the way it's happening. It is a complete merging and blurring of human and machine. The way information is represented in the brain is very complicated, he says, but the use of artificial intelligence image recognition methods now allows us to identify aspects of the content of that information. Well, yeah, just back to the mind-brain image scanning. They've been able to do some of that. And when we, and this story was just published a few days ago, I think it was November 21st. When we induced a mild fear memory in the brain, we were able to develop a fast and accurate method of reading it by using AI algorithms. Ding, ding, word of the year for 2016. Algorithms. I told you that in January. The challenge then was to find a way to reduce or remove the fear without ever consciously evoking it. So this is even scarier because you don't even have to know you have that fear yet. The second that they see that fear encoded into your brain, they're able to erase it without you even knowing. How about a lie? Some point in the future, is it going to be possible, I'm going to posit, to be able to detect where you detecting a lie lies in your brain? You might have a little lie brain detector area somewhere, and you have this pattern. I recognize a lie. What's it going to take for them to go, uh-oh, she's on to us. Time to do the zippity-zap memory erase before she realizes that we've lied to her. And this is very, 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 very frightening. You can't trust anything. You can't trust your eyes. You can't trust your ears. We established yesterday with the face. They have those face skins that you could reproduce somebody talking, and they have now the Photoshop for voice where you can literally insert words using someone's voice modulation. But now you won't even be able to trust your own memories. The team repeated this procedure over 3 days for volunteers, and these volunteers were told that the monetary reward they earned depended on their brain activity, but they didn't know by how. And continuously subjecting subtle patterns of brain activity linked to electric shocks with a small reward, scientists had hoped to gradually and unconsciously override that fear memory. Unconsciously. And listen to this now. Listen to this. The guy working on this is Dr. I. And his name is spelled A-I, his first name. I don't know if that's intentionally on purpose or just a very odd coincidence. But it is Dr. I. Kozuzumi of where? Well, he is of the Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute International. He's part of the Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute. Guys, that means telephones. That means cell phones. That means old days SS7 network that was done with tones. Toot, 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 toot. That were able to push buttons and make network connections. Your brain works on tones. Do, 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 do. Guys, I don't like that they got a telecommunications research institute dude in charge of this research, as well as another Japanese institution called the Kyoto and Center of Information and Neural Networks in Osaka. So this guy is not only of the Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute International, but he is also a part of the Kyoto and Center of Information and Neural Networks of Osaka, Japan. He was in charge of the research. In effect, he says, the features of the memory that were previously tuned to predict the painful shock are now being reprogrammed to predict something positive instead. And the team then tested what happened when they showed the volunteers the pictures previously associated with these shocks. And remarkably, we could no longer see the typical fear, skin sweating response, nor could we identify enhanced activities in the amygdala, the brain's fear center. And this meant that we were able to reduce the fear memory without the volunteers ever consciously experiencing the fear in the memory process. To apply this to patients, we now need to build a library of the brain information codes, ding, 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 brain databases, so that the technique can be developed into a clinical treatment. for patients with PTSDs or phobias. Then, in principle, patients could have regular sessions of decoded neurofeedback to gradually remove the fear response that trigger these memories. Such treatments could also have major benefits over drug-based approaches. And patients could also avoid the stress associated with exposure therapies and any side effects resulting from those drugs. So, of course, yes, of course, it is going to be better for you to get your brain zippity-zapped and have fear memories inserted and removed without you even noticing. So, you know, a couple other things talking about being able to use AI to decode information, being able to determine things to do with the brain. We had read about Tommy Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health. Tommy Insel, back in October of 2015, went over to Google's life sciences division called Verily, and they had discussed utilizing smartphones to diagnose mental illness. There have been a few stories now. I actually sent some stuff to Dr. Simon about the brain scanning and reading phobias and diagnosing mental disease just by your voice. And he was actually not that surprised because he said they've been able to do that for a while with schizophrenics. And we'd read about that. There are some special patterns that schizophrenics have in their syntax of language that they've been using for a long time as an indicator of that disorder. Well, here it comes. The future of medicine is in your smartphone. It's not just about decoding language, but also using as a biosensor. Remember, we've talked about this a lot as in our not-too-distant future. Well, it looks like it might be here. This is how they're going to keep cuts down, people. Wink, remember, new tools are tilting healthcare control from doctors to patients. Over the past decade, smartphones have radically changed many aspects of our everyday lives, from banking to shopping to entertainment. Medicine is next. With innovation of digital technologies, cloud computing, and machine learning, ding, ding, the medicalized smartphone is going to upend every single aspect of healthcare. And the end result will be that you, the patient, of course, we'll be able to take center stage for the very first time. Step right up and give yourself to the machine, all in the name of getting better healthcare. With the smartphone revolution and increasingly powerful new set of tools, from attachments that can diagnose an ear infection or track heart rhythms to an app that can monitor your mental health, ding, ding, it can reduce our use of doctors, cut costs, speed up the pace of care, and give more power to the patients. Digital avatars like that baby X and that soul machine won't replace physicians, and I'm going to add just yet. You will still be able to see doctors, but the relationship will ultimately be radically altered. But all of this raises serious issues about hacking and personal privacy that haven't yet been addressed. Of course, let's run ahead forward and do it regardless of whether or not we know what the safety is going to be. People are right to worry that the patient-doctor relationship could be eroded. Again, we're just going to be a number, diminishing the human touch in medicine. But the transformation is already underway, so there's no stopping the truck, Johnny. Like I said, this stuff is secretly sneaking in the back door, and we don't even notice, and it is going to flip the world on its head. And by the time that happens, it's going to be too late. Let's say that you have a rash that you need examined. Today, you can snap a picture of it with your smartphone and then upload it to an app to process that image, and within minutes, a dedicated computer algorithm can text you with your diagnosis. Oh, my God. Is this what we're going to come down to? Oh, this message could then include next steps such as recommending a topical ointment or a visit to a dermatologist for further assessment. And I'll say even in the not-too-distant future, they could book you an appointment with your dermatologist on record and then schedule your appointment. Send you your self-driving car to pick you up 20 minutes before appointment time. And then send you a text message that morning. Turn on your alarm. Boop, boop, boop. You have a dermatologist appointment tomorrow at 9:30. Be ready. The car will be here. I mean, this is absolutely ludicrously insane. But again, our personal liberties are going to be gone. They will know. There's some other little test using a biosensor and one of your smart devices. We looked at a smart toilet a while back at one of the consumer electronics events, expos going on in Japan. They'll be able to know if you overdid your intake of high fructose corn syrup yesterday, if you had ice cream, if you had fatty foods. And they'll be able to warn you and maybe eventually even turn off your shopping card, your biometric ID used for purchasing all of your future needs when you're on universal basic income. I mean, I see that as a distinct future that we will be living in the next less than 10 years, probably, maybe 20 at the most. Smartphones already can be used to take blood pressure or even do an electrocardiogram. ECG apps have been approved by the FDA for consumers and validated in many clinical studies. The app's data are immediately analyzed, graphed, and displayed on screen, updated with new measurements, and stored at the individual's discretion. They are then shared with the doctor. I thought I'd seen it all in my decades-long practice as a cardiologist. But recently, for the very first time, this author had an ECG emailed to me by a patient with the subject line, "I am in atrial fib. What do I do now?" I bet it was at 3 a.m. too. I immediately knew that the world had changed. The patient's home phone hadn't just recorded the data. It had just interpreted it as well. Now, at any time of day or night, you can demand and get a secure video consultation with a doctor via a smartphone at the cost of about $30 to $40, the same as a typical copay through employer health plans. And this may seem exotic right now, but several large consulting firms, including Deloitte and PricewaterhouseCoopers, have forecasted the virtual physician's visits replacing physical office visits will soon become the norm. Ding, 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 ding. Those doctors will be able to see 100 more patients a day and increase their profits, so they're all for it. They'll be able to reduce their office staff. And eventually, maybe we won't even need as many doctors because Watson will be in charge. Think about this. Again, white-collar jobs. Well-paying, well-educated individuals might literally find themselves out of future employment. Deloitte says that as many as 1 in 6 doctor visits were already virtual in 2014. And in many cities, you can even use a mobile app to request a doctor's house call, during which a physician would not only provide you with a consultation, but could even perform procedures such as suturing a wound, which would have usually required an expensive emergency room visit. Many surveys show that consumers want to get information about actual costs of their care from their doctors, but can't get it. But going forward, we see that costs will no longer be the great unmentionable hanging over medicine. Cost transparency apps for your smartphone already exist and are quickly being expanded to cover lab tests, scans, procedures, hospitals, and doctor visits, and even bigger changes are in the works. Using wearable wireless sensors, ding, 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 you can use your smartphone to generate your own medical data, including measuring your blood oxygen and glucose levels, blood pressure and heart rhythm, and if you're worried that your child may have an ear infection, a smartphone attachment will let you perform an easy eardrum exam that could rapidly diagnose the problem without a trip to the pediatrician. These innovations are just the start, and in the next year or two, hoping for the approval by the FDA, many Americans will probably start sporting wristwatches, ding, ding, that continuously and passively capture their blood pressure and vital signals with every heartbeat without ever even having to do the difficult task of pressing a button. Such wristwatch sensors could do enormous good by having the equivalent of intensive care units monitoring your risk. Hospital rooms can be replaced by our bedrooms. And as a result, except for ICU, operating rooms, emergency rooms, hospitals of the future are likely to be roomless data surveillance centers for remote patient monitoring. Oh, you know, guys, don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so. Remote monitoring data centers for humans. It is coming. And don't worry, because it's even going to get worse. They develop new tools to include necklines and necklaces that can monitor your heart function and check the amount of fluid in your lungs, contact lenses that can track your glucose or your eye pressure to manage glaucoma, and headbands that can capture your brain waves. And in the future, socks and shoes might analyze human gait for existence to tell whether or not you have Parkinson's or if your medicine is working, or tell a caregiver whether an elderly family member is unsteady, at risk of falling, or has left their corral. Remember, we even had Watson back-ending to sneakers and underwear. Why couldn't it be socks? All right, guys, this even goes on and on and on of all these things that they could do, x-ray selfies and all kinds of crazy stuff, handheld ultrasounds. We'll look at the rest of this tomorrow. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next with Open Phones, and it is Tuesday, so it is live radio day all evening tonight, starting at 7 p.m. with Ron's Game On, 8, Brand New Barbarian Lounge, 9, The Boys, Michael and Nick with Primer Time, and at 10 p.m. Eastern, S.M. Gibson. All right, have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.